Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and our neighbor and Milford Township resident naturalist Pat Schlerbaum. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, joins our bunch later in the hour to share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. You know, Pat, KHOI will be observing Earth Day, and I was out on Ada Hayden the other day. There was a common loon out there, and speaking of Ada Hayden and waterfall, Wolf Osterreich was going to be our first person up to bat on the 24th of April.
Yes, that's right. Mike, April 24th, starting at 8 a.m., I think we'll probably have Wolf on maybe 7:45.
Right.
To get a start today with an update, Wolf has been doing this for a number of years out there. But yeah, the reports of any common loons at Ada Hayden, what a special place, what a special bird. I mean, they haven't nested in Iowa for over a century. Occasionally you do see one. They like bulrushes, but they also like pristine waters, and that's what Ada Hayden is offering. It would require bulrushes if they ever wanted to nest here.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because I like pure water, but I wouldn't want to be rushed by a bull. About a rush, we're going to have Earth Week celebrations all next week, including some observation of Earth Appreciation Day on that 24th, that Saturday, all day for what, about 8.5, 9 hours?
Yeah, from 8 until 5. It's primarily a good opportunity to showcase what the city of Ames is doing for the Ames community when it comes to our carbon footprint. And, man, there's a lot of people pulling together to make Ames a special place that it is.
Okay.
And this Earth Day appreciation on April 24th, that Saturday, will be a real nice way to catch up and to enjoy all the good things that the city of Ames is bringing to our Earth and our Earth Day appreciation.
And speaking of people pulling together, we'll hear from a few folks right after this.
My tail in the air. Cat style.
And Gina McAndrews, our local Talk Wednesday co-host, joins us along with Ron Edwards, supervisor of the Ames Animal Control and Ames Animal Shelter, Marlene Ayersman, director of Iowa Wildlife Center, and Matt Wietrich, naturalist with Greene County, who is also a city council member of Jefferson, Iowa. Hello to you all.
Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Good to have you join us today. Pet cats, their care, habits, especially that need to want to prowl and get out, we need to discuss that a little bit today. So I'd like to start off by having Matt take a few minutes to describe some of the important issues we should be aware of concerning our domesticated felines as they roam about outdoors. Matt?
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, I thought give us a quick perspective as a naturalist, and if everyone's probably familiar with Pat and his role in education, and that's kind of what we do too, a county naturalist. And the thing is, with the 9-to-5 job, it is a 9-to-5 job, but also not, because wildlife never stops interacting with humans, and that's part of our job is educating about how we can do better with wildlife and animals. And that extends in and out of our house, and certainly involves our pets. So I thought it's kind of fun being on this Zoom. Actually, everybody's got their pets coming and going out of the screen. Sorry, I'm easily distracted. But
I even have Mike here.
Yeah. You see, if listeners can't see, but I've got my coffee mug. It says easily distracted by a bird. So anyway, so I wanted to point out some of the things you hear talked about a little bit. We hear feral cats, we hear stray cats, and I thought it might be important to differentiate kind of what that means. Essentially, a feral cat is an untamed cat. You might think of it as a wild cat. So this cat was either abandoned or has been and has reverted to a kind of a more wild state, or the cat was born outdoors to a feral or stray mom and has had really little to no impact contact with humans. So feral cats tend to be really frightened of people and avoid contact whenever possible. So that's kind of one population we talk about when you're thinking about feral or outdoor cats. A stray cat is a different category. That's kind of more of a, when we think about pets being outdoors, maybe it's strayed from home. Maybe you're just, it's a cat that comes and goes from a home. Sometimes they get out and they get lost, and they may search for a mate, and they may try to set up shop and raise a family outdoors. They might be friendly for a while, or sometimes they become weary of people. And so some of these things are kind of part of the challenge of trying to adopt these cats that we are getting off the streets, per se. And so, we're going to hear from some folks here in a minute, I think, that will address some of the challenges with these kind of different categories of cats that have been outside or are outside frequently. So I wanted to kind of talk real quickly just about what are some of the issues. Like, why do we care about this? Why does it matter if cats are outdoors or not? And I kind of have it broken into five quick categories. And some of the things that we see, and I see as a city councilman in Jefferson, we hear from citizens, is people experience property damage. So this could be, there's folks who don't use their decks or their porches because they reek of cat urine so badly, or they've had outdoor furniture destroyed, or issues with their own pets, with dogs, and that kind of gets into quality of life, which is another thing we refer to as quality of life, and the fact that especially if you have dogs inside, and always, dogs and cats not always fans of one another, and so whether it's barking throughout the night or I know our mayor here had a dog put his paw through two panes of glass and irritated with the cat on the front porch, for a couple examples. Impacts of landscaping around people's houses and becoming litter boxes. Another category would be native wildlife that's affected, and we could do a whole show just on this and all the statistics. There's upwards of a few billion birds that are killed every year in the United States from outdoor cats. And then even more so with mammals and reptiles and amphibians. And then another concern is public health. Cats can spread a few different diseases. And I'll save that for anybody else who wants to dive into that a little bit more. But there's certainly a legitimate health concerns with cats running amok. And it's kind of unsettling for parents sometimes. You know, kids tend to, you know, you get the innate connection to animals and want to go up and pet a cat or dog or whatever it may be. And there can be some negative impacts as far as that goes.
Okay.
And then, yes.
I was just going to say, go ahead, finish up, and then we'll go to Marlene.
Okay. Yes. One quick thing is, then I think also a very important component of the issue with cats being outdoors is it's cruelty to the cats themselves. So animal welfare. And these are animals that are domesticated and meant to be indoors. And to have to fend for themselves is one could certainly make the argument for that would be cruelty to the cats themselves. So it benefits the cats to be able to stay inside as well.
Thank you, Matt. Marlene, Matt addressed or brought up a point about the wildlife aspect, and you handle quite a bit of cases as far as a rehabber. What is your concern? What do you bring to this discussion?
Well, I think one reason that we started, the Iowa Wildlife Center started the Cats Under Control initiative with the city of Ames, with Ron Edwards and his department, and is because of the animals that we see in our wildlife rehabilitation center. And it varies. It's not just birds, which seems to be a primary prey species for cats, but also mammals and snakes. And I think that people don't understand that reptiles and mammals are also affected by feral cats to a great degree also. And so we've had bats come in that have been shredded by cats, and we've had snakes that have been attacked by cats with lots of puncture wounds. And any wound that a cat inflicts on an animal comes with a lot of microorganisms, bacteria, especially in cat mouth. It's an incredible population of bacteria in their saliva. So it always comes with antibiotic treatment at that point. So it is definitely, we're definitely seeing an impact at our center. And I know centers across the country are seeing, because they see greater numbers of animals than we do, we still remain small and are limiting our intake. But the Wildlife Center of Virginia, 90% of their patients were admitted from April that were teenage wildlife. And teenage wildlife get into a lot of trouble because they don't know how to evade predators as easily as adults do. And it's still not easy for adult wildlife.
Now, Marlene, explain a little bit about what you mean teenage, because it's not the typical teen years. It's a developmental stage, correct?
Right, it is. Yeah. So you got your little nestlings, whether they're cottontails, which, by the way, is a number one call that we're getting right now about cats inflicting injury and death to cottontails, all still in their nest, and then they leave the nest and they're juveniles and are teenagers, and then they become adults. So it is a life stage of these animals. So, you know, they can inflict incredible numbers of injuries on all these animals, and mortality for birds and wildlife centers can be in like 81% death if after it comes into a wildlife rehabilitation center. So because people bring it to us and save it doesn't mean that animal is going to live.
So can you compare that to, say, an animal that isn't involved with a cat, the percentage of abilities? I know broken bones, for example, in birds, it's pretty tough to rehab and release, but do you have an idea percentage wise?
I don't.
Okay. But it sounds like at least 80% of those that are brought into you are, you essentially have to euthanize.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So it's pretty amazing. So it just seems like, you know, back in 1996, this is not a new problem. So back in 1996, the National Association of State Public Health Veterinarians, all right, came out with a position statement, and they they define feral cats as introduced, established, non-native species. So right there, we spend millions of dollars across the country dealing with introduced, established, non-native species, not just cats, but others. And so here we are faced with a domestic animal that we keep releasing into the wild, causing him to be feral. So we've got to deal with this, people.
Okay. Let's head over to Ron Edwards' part of the program. Ron, I know you probably get a lot of calls about reported strays and maybe missing animals, that kind of thing. How is the city approaching this?
Sure. Well, I think fortunately the city has taken a somewhat progressive approach and requiring that cats be have a leash law just like dogs. So just like your dog can't be running in your neighbor's yard, your cat is not allowed to either. Now, just like speed laws, people still speed, even though there's been speed laws forever. Some people still allow their cats to run free. We do get people calling us, complaining about someone's cat that's running loose. They'll call and report their neighbor's cat running loose, so we'll make contact with them. So we're not going to catch every single cat that is out there running loose, but having this ordinance in effect and having our animal control officer team being able to go out there and enforce this code, I think has saved a lot of wildlife and in my field, most importantly, saved a lot of cats' lives. They don't have nine lives like everyone thinks. You know, some of the things that we see in animal control, the negative side of people allowing their cats to get outside, almost every single cat that we get into the shelter has some form of external or internal parasites. So we're immediately, you know, we're checking their feces, seeing under the microscope slide that it has these parasites. We're treating them for them. So that's just some of the dangers for the cats. You know, there's, of course, being hit by cars. And actually, this it's really sad. This last week, we've actually had three cats hit by cars that did not make it. And that's actually a pretty high number for us in a short period of time. We typically get about 20, 25 cats that we pick up deceased on the road that have been hit by cars in our community, and that's just the city of Ames.
So there's a public health aspect, not only physical, because of some of the things that perhaps you would be exposed to, like toxoplasmosis, I know is one with the, especially if it's the yards being treated as a litter box, but also the emotional toll it takes if you see a cat, a dead one on the road, or you lose your cat.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some people may think that we're kind of hardened and it's just picking up a deceased animal for us. And I can tell you with all of our staff, it is not that way. It is definitely emotionally draining on us when we see these animals. And even when we pick up wildlife that's on the road that have been hit by cars, you know, I have a great team out there at the animal shelter and they're all very compassionate about the work that they do. So seeing these animals in this state, it honestly breaks our heart, and it's difficult to see, especially when there's so many reasons why you can, you know, keep your cat and should keep your cat indoors. I hear people say they love running and climbing up trees and they need that energy outburst and being able to, you know, burn off that energy. Get another cat. You know, we have plenty of cats at the shelter. That you can adopt and have a friend at home to keep your cat's energy level down and where they're playing together, but keep them safe, keep them indoors.
So you're saying keep them indoors, but like you alluded to, cats by nature are prowlers, they're hunters. I mean, let's face it. So how can we go about resolving this issue where we're protecting our wildlife, public health, that kind of thing, and still treating a cat as a cat? What are some of the alternatives? I know Marlene mentioned a group that the initiative, and I know Gina McAndrews is a realtor. She's a homeowner, like most of us are. She's a renter. Gina, what is your take on this from that perspective?
Well, I really understand all the issues, and I really like birds and wildlife and think they should be able to roam. There's enough predators, I think, for most of our little wildlife and or smaller wildlife that, you know, they've got smaller amounts of habitat and everything already. Just having cats out and about, like Ron was saying, you know, we've already got plenty and plenty of cats. And when we have them out roaming and producing more cats, that on one hand produces more issues. And I think having them on a leash is no different than having a dog on a leash. I mean, dogs used to be with wolves too and roam the whole countryside. But I really think there's no reason that we cannot keep them on a leash and keep them inside. Another great option that Marlene and Ron came up with, and Matt, I'm not sure who's all created it, but is a catio, which is kind of an outdoor patio for cats that you can create this wonderful atmosphere that's screened in. So they can't get out and be necessarily out in the wild, but they can have an outdoor experience, fresh air and all kinds of activities to climb and crawl and play. I have a small house that I rent out, and a good friend is renting it, and she loves cats, and she got a couple from Ron at the shelter. And so it had part of a overhanging on the garage, and so Marlene helped us design a place we could build a little catio. So there's kind of a little tunnel that comes out the window, and it's kind of like a doggy door. So the cat has the cats have a cat door and a cat little tunnel that they can go outside whenever they want. But they're enclosed in this. It's a pretty good sized a patio that's just screened in. And so they love to sit out there and they play, and they've got all kinds of climbing gear, and they have a great time. And
she can sit in, Gina, she can sit inside that catio with her cats and friends and drink her wine and have snacks. And so she just absolutely loves it. And it's changed the behavior of the cats indoors too, to have this freedom. And I've heard that of others too, is that it changes the behavior of the cats because they aren't out duking it out with other cats and don't come back battle wounds and scarred up and fearful all the time. And so the behavior of your indoor cat then with access to a catio can shift and they can become a better pet. So I think it's all really important to think about the psychology of the cats in enabling them to be outdoors in a protected environment.
I know that I've got two friends, two different friends. One has an outdoor structure, and he carries his cat when he's got to be gone for a while. He's actually got a couple cats. He puts them into the structure, so it's a different type of environment for part of the day, and there's a lot of stimulation in that structure. But where I was going with this is, if you build a catio, that means that you've got to spend some money. And I guess, well, if you've got an injured cat, you're going to have to spend money too. But what's involved in a catio? How extensive is this? The structure? How do you go about paying for it? What is the cost of a typical? You talk about that?
Yeah, I can sure talk about that. And so as we started into this catio initiative, or the cats under control initiative with the catios are cool segment of it, we started looking online at all the different designs out there. And I talked to friends and had them send me photos and everything. We have a real opportunity here to design and create all sizes and kinds of catios. You can have a simple window perch for them that it just extends outside a little bit, or you can have this extensive catio patio concept that Gina was alluding to. And here in Ames, we have Iowa Home Consulting owner Matthew Bradner has offered to build catios labor-free. So the homeowner or the renter, if they get permission from the landlord, would just need to pay for materials for their catio. So this is a real opportunity wow. here that Iowa Home Consulting is offering KHOI listeners.
And I just want to let KHOI listeners know that along with your links to get a hold of you folks if they have further questions, I also have his link that we will have available later on so they can check KHOI for that link.
And we'd be glad to, I'm not sure how you would put it on there, but so I have some pictures of the catio that we built. Or if anybody wanted to see it too, we could probably arrange a personal tour. But it's basically the roof that was overhanging the garage. There was posts coming down, and basically it was real simple. We just put screens around it, and it was good. You know, it was cost a few hundred dollars.
Yeah. So they pay for the materials, and then at least for now, Matt will install labor free. And I guess we can make that offer to our KHOI listeners. Is that correct, Marlene?
That's absolutely correct.
He's
yes.
willing to do that. And that's not Matt Waitrick now, folks. So you don't have to go all the way to Jefferson.
That's right.
We're a little more local here.
the goal of this is to expand these concepts and services to all sorts of communities. So if we can reach out and find contractors or hobbyists, you retired folks looking for projects like this, and that seems like a great opportunity in a lot of communities for folks to do these things.
The other friend I wanted to talk about has a little indoor-outdoor entry, assuming the cat's going to use it and it goes out. Well, folks, you know, you might think, well, that's a great idea, but this particular friend had a outdoor critter that started using that entry. In fact, I can think of two people, but this particular one ended up, they felt this brushing on their feet in the kitchen in the middle of the night and thought it was their cat. And it turned out it was that little Pepe Le Pew, let's just say. It was a striped skunk, and boy, were they careful with that. I also know of one other instance. In fact, I think it might be one of the individuals here who told me that there was a way for the cat to get in and out of a basement, and there was a raccoon that was using that entrance. I think, yeah, Mike is shaking his head here, and he was the one who told me that story. So the point is that it's not good for either of those critters because those wildlife assume, you know, they start habitating around your domicile, and that's not great for your health either. You know, we talk about the health of the critters. How about the health of the cat? Ron, can you talk or address a little bit the concerns and what we should do with our, not only our pet cats, but our pets in general, our dogs, to keep this the feral population down, for example?
Sure. Well, you know, some of the most and the most important thing I can probably say is absolutely spaying and neutering. That's going to call these numbers. We're going to be able to deal with the number of cats running around. If your pet does get out accidentally, because of course they should be indoors, if they get out accidentally, we know at least they're not going to be creating families out there for us. You know, that's the most important thing. But of course, microchipping is another very, very important thing. So if animal control picks up your cat, we will scan it for a chip automatically. It's a policy of ours, and we can get it right back to its people. We actually have a microchip clinic coming up on May 15th, and we're still accepting applications for it. It's only $10 to get your cat or dog microchipped.
And I assume folks can go on the City of Ames website to get to your site for that.
Correct. And they can go to amesanimalshelter.org. Either one will get you there. You can also call the shelter. We'll give you information about how to sign up for the microchip clinic. But those are really important things to do to make sure that we can get your pets back to you if they were to get out. The shelter gets a lot more cats in than we do dogs every year. And most of them have absolutely no identification whatsoever. So being able to get them back to their people is extremely important to us.
Okay. And also remember, folks, that vaccination of your basic diseases is extremely important with all of your pets, whether you take them out or not. That's a public health measure, and it's part of the welfare of that animal. We've got about a minute left, folks. So who would like to take that last minute to just kind of do your elevator speech for the catio? Marlene?
One thing I think about is...
Gina.
You know, people... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Gina.
Well, then I'll let Marlene. I'll make it quick. You know, people have been outside, too, but how many of us would like to be throw us in a jungle and left to kind of wander around for a while... and survive, you know, if lions and tigers and bears oh my, versus, you know, the majority of people right now they're very content with their backyard or a park. And I think that's a little bit similar to cats and dogs, that they're, you know, they look to us as leadership and they like a safe environment so they don't have to be nervous and they can still get interaction.
Marlene, last 30 seconds.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to clear up is that one thing we'll be doing is a lot of education programming and things as the weeks and months roll out here about this issue. But also the people that I know that have built catios for their animals and have seen a big difference in how they relate to their animals, but also in the personalities of the animals, used to always let their cats be indoor-outdoor cats. So these aren't people that started out believing cats should be under control. These are people who started out letting their cats roam free and then largely because of my input, decided to build the catios and have really breathed a big sigh of relief because they don't have to worry. Their cats are happier, and it's a win-win, truly.
And so on that, we'll end on the win-win. So I thank you all. I thank Gina. We'll see you or hear you tomorrow on the radio, I assume, with Susan as the co-host. Ron, yes. Edwards, supervisor of the Ames Animal Control and Ames Animal Shelter, thank you for joining us today. Marlene Ayersman, director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. And Matt Wietrich, naturalist in Greene County and a city council member of Jefferson, Iowa. I thank you all for joining us. I know I'm sure we'll and you will get some questions on this, and I think it sounds like a great idea all the way around. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to welcome Susan Gwiazda from the city of Ames, the public relations officer, and I see you have a guest from the Ames Public Library, Director Sheila Schofer, who is joining us today. How are you,
Susan?
That's
right. Good. It's great to be here. It's a beautiful, beautiful day today. One of the things that we've been happy to phase in and reintroduce is the reopening of our Ames Public Library. There are still restrictions in place, just like there are at all public buildings. But Sheila is excited to welcome people back, and I thought that she would welcome this opportunity to share a little bit about what's going on.
That sounds great. Now, Susan, do you have anything to announce before we talk with Sheila, or are you going to hold that for Friday?
I have a long list for Friday, so I'll let Sheila take the time right now.
All right, thanks. Hello, Sheila. What have you got to share with us as far as the reopening of the library? What's the protocol?
Well, good morning. We are excited to have expanded. We had a nice safe setup in the lobby and, you know, made it convenient for people, but people were missing that fuller, deeper browsing opportunity. And so we do have the adult services and the children's youth services area open and ready for browsing so people can come in. You can use the computers. You can sit and read a magazine. We do ask that people try to keep their visit short, but I'll tell you, it's been a really safe, good environment. And so we're not like following people around and tapping our watches, but I think partly because people are being mindful about the time they spend in there and not like lingering for hours and hours on end is what's making it safe for everybody. So
and of
it's
course,
safe.
What I was going to add is, of course, we have a city ordinance on masking, and I assume the library observes this as well.
Yes, absolutely. Masks are required. We have masks available for you if you forgot yours. And we have hand sanitizer stations throughout and by the computers and things like that. So we try to make it as easy for you as possible. And, you know, we find most people understand and are compliant with that. So that's we appreciate that. I think they're just happy to, you know, have access to that awesome collection of books. And we have some fun displays going on. There's some poetry displays up right now. And, you know, I really encourage people to come in and check us out and see your friendly faces, you know, your librarians and your staff. We miss you. And we want to chat and see our community.
You know, you speak about community, and library is so important to community. And it's just a great area to visit with friends. You might go there to pick up a book, but you always bump into somebody you know or you would like to know. And it's just a great place to kind of keep in touch with everybody. And I know a lot of folks have missed that. And it sure is nice that you're able to open up. And I know this is a phased transition. So can you add something to the transitional phase?
So probably our next step, you know, we had stepped back our hours a little bit when there was some uncertainty and we were worried, you know, people would be out or we had to shift schedules. So we'll probably add those evening hours back on Monday and Wednesday. And that kind of gears us up to also explore bringing back our bookmobile service. We have some new people who are learning driving, and they're getting further along. So we've got our crew of drivers a little bit more up to speed. And, you know, that those evenings are nice for that service, too. So I'll probably roll out some bookmobile service. And then we're kind of mapping out what it will look like as we kind of are in this transition time about how best to introduce those meeting room spaces. And we'll probably do that you know, a little bit phased, maybe not quite, so we don't have back-to-back appointments. Maybe we'll put some limitations in to say, okay, if the room normally holds 20, but that's a pretty tight fit, maybe we cut that in half. So kind of just adjust capacity, maybe give a little space in between. And so we're kind of sorting those things out, you know, watching the community, watching that mask mandate. And we'll probably, you know, certainly by July, maybe even June for the meeting rooms.
Okay, and I was going to have Gina ask a question about that. Gina, why don't you go ahead and ask your question, and Sheila can maybe elaborate a little bit.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. I just had a quick question, Sheila, on the, you know, they have those single meeting rooms that people can go and just kind of work in quiet and meet alone or, you know, work on their computer or whatever. Are those open?
They are not. They are not. We had to, when we had to socially distance our staff space, because our staff were sitting too closely together. They weren't 6 feet apart from each other. And so when staff is sitting too close, we spread them out and we spread them out into those rooms. You know, as we start realizing, hey, what are these new protocols? And as more people get vaccinated, but we're not quite there yet. We're so close, but not quite there. But, you know, the meeting rooms, when the study rooms are available, we'll make them available to the public.
Great. And I know, you know, the Farwell Brown room, that was used by quite a number of groups to make presentations and that kind of thing. Is there going to be any type of a hybrid as far as using that room or in the case of Gina's question? Will there be a hybrid situation?
Yes. I'm so glad you asked that because we are looking to do hybrid in all those rooms. Certainly in the auditorium or the Farwell T. Brown room you're mentioning, our bigger space, that'll be set up. It pretty much is now, just a few little tweaks to make it more hybrid friendly, so that we can have some limited in-person or, you know, some in-person distanced, and then have people zoom in as well. And the same with our meeting rooms upstairs. We want to do those with that same capacity to be some people in person, some people zooming in, and the study rooms too, because sometimes we have people who want to set up for an interview, a job interview or something like that, or, you know, need to connect with someone. And we're just in a more of a Zoom world. So I think that's just being responsive to community interests now. And we have had requests for, some programs this summer, like would we be able to do them hybrid? Because I think people have found that people come to programs who maybe wouldn't necessarily come in person. You know, it's a little bit easier. They get home, get settled, and they'll jump on Zoom for an evening program, but they might not be ready to come out again. So we want to make sure we're available to those people.
And I know KHOI has been partnering with Ames Public Library on a couple of different hours during the week, lunch hour, and then on Saturdays there's a time frame too. So we sure value that aspect of being able to share the library resources. So another question I started to have, and then it kind of slipped. So, oh, I know what it was. Okay, so I've been able to check out some monographs, as my wife would call books, mm-hmm. and journals, because she was the librarian. She was an assistant librarian at the Iowa State Vet College. So monographs are a word in my vocabulary. what happens when these things are returned? The tapes, the movies, the DVDs, the books, the journals, do you treat them in any way to assure folks that they're safe to handle?
You know, we were following some guidance that was out there, and it was a best guess and kind of based on some lab things and not really in real life situation. But we did quarantine for 72 days initially. Or 72 hours, sorry,
yeah.
3 days. And then we stepped that down. It seemed like the more we learned about the virus, the less it seemed that it was really on that contact surface. And then the recommendation was down to 24 hours. And just recently, our state library said, you know, that really does not seem to be the place of contact, of transmission. So we just stepped back from that.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring that up to reassure the public that you were following those guidelines, and the fact that being an ex-virologist type, that book would be considered what's called a surface or a fomite, and it doesn't, with this particular virus, you don't have to worry about that with those types of surfaces after 10 minutes, 15 minutes. It's pretty much it's a respiratory, it's an aerosol spread or contact spread, and so we don't have to worry about surfaces as much. You know, there may be a mm-hmm. few. Continue your typical hygienic protocol, but I'm glad to hear that the library was taking the measures as the science was proving otherwise. So great. Do you have anything else to add, Sheila? Have we missed something? It's been a while since I've had my nose in a book, about 15 minutes ago, I think it was, because I was reading something for our Science Bites coming up. But anything to add?
Well, I think, people know our books. They know our computers. I'd encourage you to check out some other of our non-traditional circulating items. So we have park packs right now. It's spring. It's a nice time of year, so you can get out their backpacks. We did them in conjunction with Story County Conservation, and they have like a nice laminated educational sheet and some activities, but they also have things like a butterfly net, a little thing to sample water, you know, so there are different themes. There's a bug themed one, a pond themed one, one on pollinators. That's probably really pertinent right now. And so you get out and you explore nature with some guided activities and some fun hands-on instruments to help you do that science. So that's exciting. We have our STEM kits, which we've always had, but those are things like promote science, technology, engineering, and math. And they're fun activities from a programmable little robot to building bridges and all kinds of things. So those are fun. And kind of a spin on that, we do a science video every week, and where they introduce a science concept and then and have some books, you know, displayed that might be fun to tie in. And then you come into the library and you pick up a little grab and go bag or a little takeaway activity bag, and it's got things in it. So this week I think they're glow sticks. I haven't watched the video yet, but they're fun. There's things on geodes and magnets and all kinds of stuff.
So that's for the kid in all of us, right? It doesn't.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have an age limit on those.
They're intended for children, but we don't card anybody.
I'm going to just. There was another concern that concerns all of us. If we're a little tardy in our return, what is your system as far as handling fines, or for that matter? You might throw in what happens if you receive something, if you receive your goods in a damaged condition. Could you just cover those two as we wrap up our discussion this morning?
So we've been looking, following the lead of other libraries around the country and certainly other libraries in Iowa, and had seen the value of going fine free. You know, it creates an undue barrier for parts of our community, and our library's goal is all about access and connecting people. And if a fine gets in the way, and we saw, you know, everyone who's a librarian has seen someone, you know, whose parents said, no, don't take that. We don't want to pay the fines, or, you know, some kind of curb on letting people check out. And so when we had we're doing our strategic plan, we felt strongly that moving in the direction of fine free was the best way to add some equity to our library. And so we did that in October. We went fine free. So you don't have to pay your fines. You know, if you are able and can, we just would take that in the form of a donation. That would be lovely. But yeah, we didn't want that to be a barrier. If you lose an item, these are just fines for being late. If you lose an item, you know, we'll work with you to try to find it, but at a certain point, you'll have to pay to replace that.
Sure.
You know, and we'll work with people if that's a real hardship. But if it's damaged, we certainly want you to share that with us and let us know, because, you know, sometimes wear and tear happens. Sometimes you drop them in the bathtub and that one's on you.
I learned this very early in fifth grade, and this is no joke. I mean, you hear the, oh, my dog ate the homework line for your teachers, but I checked out this hardcover American Heritage book of the Civil War, and it had all these illustrations. Well, my black lab actually chewed about a quarter of it. I am not kidding. And we replaced it, but I think I still have that someplace. Mom said, this is a reminder. But for those folks, you know, these things cost money, of course, and you have different budgetary ways of dealing with this. But tell us briefly in the last minute about the Friends group for the library.
Yes, we have an amazing Friends Foundation, and they support a lot of what we do. We get a great city budget, but, you know, sometimes that covers the basics like staff and our core collection and our building. We have a beautiful building. But so some of those above and beyond specialty things like these activity kits I just mentioned, that's the Friends Foundation. So that's the generosity of our community members who see the value in having a thriving, beautiful, vibrant library. And they show that through their support. And I know the Friends just sent out their spring mailing as part of the National Library Week. Last week was National Library Week. And so, they are wonderful. And it's a great way to, you know, for the community to support their library.
Well, we'll turn a page for the support of the library. So, Sheila, thank you. And Susan, thank you. And
I just add one thing?
Sure.
Sheila talking all about some of their things they were doing reminded me of the one thing I wanted to announce, and that is that the water is coming back to the parks this week. Oh. So restrooms will be open. We do get calls about that. Those will go first. And then due to potential freeze in the next couple of weeks, the drinking fountains will come on closer to the end of the month. So those are always welcome signs of spring. And the other question I keep getting this week is about our free spring yard waste day.
Oh, yeah.
That date has not been determined. We anticipate we'll know this week when the free spring day is. So we'll get it out on our website and out to local media as soon as we have it set.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. And again, thank you, Sheila, Director of the Ames Public Library.
Thank you.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. A reading rainbow.
Drink a rum.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Here we go with Anna Banana. She joins our bunch. And Anna, what do you have to share with us this fine day?
Well, it is Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI today. So I'm going to start with sharing this heart-to-heart message from a woman named Tammy Dunrow, author of the Food on the Food blog. And her food blog has been praised by the Boston Globe, the Chicago Tribune, and Edible Boston. It documents her messy adventures trying to feed her family the best meal she can with a little dessert thrown in because you only live once, my kind of girl. So here is her heart-to-heart message that comes in the form of a poem in which she adds a disclaimer at the end, but we'll get to that later. So here it is, a pesto poem. Garlic scapes of any amount, roughly chopped, a bunch of basil, stems removed, leaves fragrant, a handful of walnuts or pine nuts or such, quite a bit of grated Parmesan cheese, a sensible amount of salt, doubled, and some black pepper, and a food processor with more olive oil than anything else. Presto, pesto. And then she ends with, this is why I'm not a poet, but I think it's a pretty good poem. And there are plenty of posts in response to the poem from Jess. She wrote, if I was your mom, I'd totally put that on the fridge. And I bet that dynamic duo, Donna and Lana, would have loved this poem and put this poem on their fridge, especially because today Donna is going to share a good ramp pesto recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. And I understand they will also be talking about fungi, ecosystems, foraging, nettles, an appreciation of sandhill cranes, and maybe more to come. Ah, spring.
Well, I know a couple of fun people, so you mentioned fungi.
Hey, wait for it. Wait for it. Don't you steal my thunder, Mike. So what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? Donna Lana Kitchen Show talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor on Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. All right, Mike Metz. So who would you choose to hang out with? A strawberry, a celery stick, or a mushroom?
Oh, a mushroom.
Because?
Because it's a fun guy.
Exactly. Now, speaking of fun guys, what will we hear if we tune in and listen to you and Sam discuss on Science Bites today?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because we are going to continue providing the answer to some of life's basic questions. And it's the follow-up to finish of a bunch of questions and emails that we received earlier. So we're trying to work our way through that pile of life.
Wow, that's probably a pretty big pile, I would guess. So after you listen to two fun guys make science interesting, you can tune in tonight at 8:30 p.m. to find out what songs I match to the messages and conversation that are part of this show. Now, the second Tuesday of the month is reserved for Keisha Beasley and Angie Weekly, who share what they have adopted in their personal faith journeys. This program will start with the story of a sister who stayed by her baby brother's side until he was rescued by a princess, and then because of her quick thinking, she was able to keep her family together. Now, let me see if you can guess from me reading the lyrics of one of tonight's songs, which I'm guessing you can, actually. So to all those who provide support, love, and encouragement to others, I dedicate these lyrics to you. It might have appeared to go unnoticed, but I've got it all here in my heart. I want you to know I know the truth. Of course, I know it. I would be nothing without you. Did you ever know that you're my hero? Oh, okay, so I bet you can guess the song.
I know what it is.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a splendid song of life and love.
Wrong. Now, find out if you're right, though, by tuning in to KHY 89.1 at 8:30. Now, a sneak preview to what is ahead this Thursday to bring in Mike Murphy into the conversation. This is a joke connected to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. What's noisier than a whooping crane, Mike Murphy?
Two whooping cranes.
Oh, that's good, but nope. A trumpeting swan. Oh, wait, wrong joke. They're talking about sandhill cranes, not whooping cranes. Whoops. Well, speaking of trumpeting, what's happening on Thursday for those who tune into You Name It?
Well, that actually, Anna, is a very good segue that you picked trumpeting because April is National Jazz Appreciation Month, so we're going to be featuring a lot of great jazz music.
Ooh, I have your back, Mike Murphy. That's great. So tune in on Thursday. Now let's go back to Tuesday. Instead of hearing something you've never heard of before, check out All Things Piano and Beyond today at 9 a.m. on KHOI's YouTube page and tuning in. So a lot of reasons to tune into KHOI. It is time for Anna Banana to split. So until next time, I hope your days are connected to KHOI. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you, Anna. And Pat joins us.
Please consider becoming a member of this fine community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
And this program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg and engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. You heard from Matt Wietrich, Marlene Erisman, Susan Guiazda, Sheila Schofer, and I left out Ron Edwards there for a moment. I've been your host, Mike Metz.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again
on the radio.
Join KHOI in a concert featuring Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey on Sunday, May 9th at 5 p.m. to raise funds for KHOI Community Radio. The concert will be held at Stevens Auditorium to kick off KHOI's spring membership drive. Tickets are $25 for reserve seats and $50 for VIP reserve seats, which are the first 11 rows. Live streaming for home viewing will also be available for $15 single and $25 group prices. Purchase tickets and live stream online. You can go to khoifm.org to find out more. That's right. It's Chad Elliott, Iowa's Renaissance Man, and Bo Ramsey. That's right, Grammy award-winning guitar player Bo Ramsey. That's all on Sunday, May 9th, starting at 5 p.m. at Stevens Auditorium. Go to khoifm.org for more information and to find out how to get those tickets. We're all anxiously awaiting to experience live music again.